Good morning. It's time to get up with number one. Can the draft's top pick, Paolo Banchero, turn Orlando into a Magic Kingdom of the NBA? And Kyrie concern as the superstar angles for a new deal in Brooklyn. He's now got a list of trade destinations. What does it mean for him and Kevin Durant? And Arch goes to Austin, how the Texas Longhorns hooked the latest star from football's first family right under Nick Saban's nose. We got that and a lot more. As we say, welcome to you on Get Up. I'm Ryan Smith in for Greeny. Got a great show for you here today. And look who's here, Adrian Wojnarowski. Just fresh off the draft, slept like 2 hours, came right here to talk draft and Kyrie drama. And also, look who else is here, Rob Ninkovich, Jeremy Fowler, here to talk football, Buster only, talking Yankees. But first, we start with that new generation of NBA stars, the draft last night. An exciting night, by the way, at the draft, because it was a surprise right at the top. The Magic took Paolo Banchero number one, joining Zion, Kyrie, and Elton Brand. He's now the fourth Duke player to go first overall in the modern draft era, breaking a tie with Kentucky for the most over that span. Then Chet Holmgren, who was the number one overall recruit in 2021, went to the Thunder, second overall, now the highest drafted player to come from Gonzaga in the modern draft era. And then Jabari Smith Jr., number three to Houston, hadn't drafted an eventual All-Star since Yao Ming in 2002, longest active drought for any franchise. So an interesting night from the draft as Woj comes back with us. And Woj, I have to ask, what has been the reaction from around the league of Paolo Banchero going number one to the Magic?
Hey, Ryan, it was a lot of surprise. It was about 7:30, 7:25 when we started to get a sense that indeed the pick was going to be Banchero. And this was one of the great stealth pre-draft operations run by Jeff Weltman, John Hammond in Orlando. They had everybody convinced that Jabari Smith Jr. was going to be their pick at number one. Jabari Smith Jr.'s camp believed they were going number one. Chet Holmgren and his camp, they believed they were at number two to Oklahoma City, which is how that stood up. And, of course, the Rockets went from believing they were going to take Banchero to, in that time frame, realizing that there was a really good chance that Jabari Smith Jr., the player that many thought was going to be number one overall, would make it to them at number three.
You think about that list of players in Orlando that have gone number one, Shaq, Dwight Howard, Chris Webber, then traded for Penny Hardaway, and now Banchero. So we'll see how that plays out. Now, the other big story that you were all over yesterday, you had the big story of the day, essentially. Kyrie Irving, what's the latest on his decision and what's going on with him in the Nets?
This is a really murky scenario right now between Kyrie Irving, the Nets, and Kevin Durant. He has a $36 million player option he can opt into midweek next week, or he could opt out, become a free agent. And right now it's a situation in the marketplace where there's no cap space out there for Kyrie Irving to leverage the Nets that he can go into. Essentially what his leverage is the Lakers' taxpayer mid-level exception, which is about $6 million. So you're looking at taking, a $30 million hit to do that. And of course, they could create space. The next year, he could re-sign there on a longer deal. But he's wanted a long-term deal in Brooklyn. They've not been willing to do it. And now Kevin Durant, who is on a long-term deal, how does that impact how he looks at moving forward in Brooklyn? Now, sometimes this is simply a negotiation dance. And the only thing they can legally negotiate right now is an extension off of that $36 million number. And so there's going to have to be communication between the Nets and Kyrie Irving here in the coming days. If there's a way for them to land on a way to move forward together. But it's looking less likely as this thing plays out that at the very least you're going to see Kyrie Irving on any kind of long-term deal. And if he opts into the deal, then he's under contract for this year at $36 million. I think for him, his willingness to take significantly less money, which he did do last year by not getting vaccinated, it cost him about $17 million in lost salary, essentially lost a shoe deal over his the fact that he's been so unavailable the last couple years. This is a drama that, again, it's not just Kyrie Irving, but is how does it impact Kevin Durant, how he feels about moving forward in Brooklyn, and whether they can hold together, this pair that they brought with such great hope expectations together a few years ago, are they going to be able to move forward with them?
It's amazing. It's such a fascinating story. Just a month or so ago, he was talking about how KD and I are working it out and trying to make this team work together in the way we want. And now he is in this situation. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Now, this news you broke yesterday was just incredible. The list that he's mentioned of Kyrie Irving's proposed trade list. We're talking both LA teams, the Lakers, the Clippers, as well as the crosstown Knicks, the Heat, the Mavericks, and the 76ers, but none of those teams have cap space to sign him without Brooklyn's help, and sources said some aren't interested in acquiring him.
Some, if not many, of that group are not necessarily interested. The Lakers are really the one team on that list that has great interest in Kyrie Irving. This is his list. It is not necessarily the wish list of those teams.
Let's welcome in Seth Greenberg to talk more about Kyrie Irving. Seth, had to get you on because I had to get your reaction to Kyrie releasing this trade list. What do you think?
Well, it's typical Kyrie. There is always drama. There's always something. As talented as he is, draft night, the biggest night for those young people that are trying to get to where he was and where he is. But it's always something. Like, the dude was going to be a Celtic for life. He wanted his own team. He wanted to be the focal point. Then he wanted to team up with KD. All right? He gets KD to join along with him. Then, all of a sudden, at the end of the season, he's going to get with Shaw Marks. And Shaw Marks and KD and Kyrie are going to, all of a sudden, they're going to create this new image of the Nets. Oh, no, on a draft night, all of a sudden, now he's going to give you a list? Come on, man. It's always about him. Great talent. Undeniable, but when you talk about Kyrie Irving, can you count on him? And the answer is no. It's flat and simple. The answer is no. All right. And if you can't count on him, how valuable is he? Is his talent better than the issues that come along with it? In a lot of ways, would you want to coach him? Because if you want to coach him as a coach, you want to know what you have. All right. You want to know what you have. You want someone that you can count on. If you have no idea, and it has nothing to do with, you know, the vaccine and everything else, because there's a history prior to that, except in the time in Cleveland when he had someone that basically, you know, whether you want, like it or not, was the focal point of everything they did.
Yeah, and, you know, look at what we have on the bottom of the screen here. He's missed more games than he played since joining the Nets in 2019-2020. So you mentioned he's always drama, but we talk about the incredible talent. So do the cost-benefit analysis for us. Is he worth it, giving those things? Given that drama versus all that talent?
I don't think he's worth it because – I don't think he's worth it, Ryan, because as talented as he is, you can just look at what has happened since he's been away from LeBron James. All right? It didn't work out in Boston. To me, there's always an issue. So does his talent outweigh – His productivity when he's on the court, when he's engaged, that's one thing. And then the distraction. There's always something. Championship teams don't have distractions. So if you think you're bringing Kyrie Irving into your team to win a championship, his talent says yes, but everything else that comes along with it says no.
All right, and we'll see if the Nets say yes to him or if someone else says yes to him somewhere else. Seth Greenberg, always great to talk to you, my friend.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Let's go to baseball with the game of the night, and it was a doozy. Yankees hosting the Astros, bottom eighth. Yankees trailing 6-3. Anthony Rizzo at the plate, runner on first, hits it to deep right, and watch this. Kyle Tucker with the catch. Acrobatic indeed. What a catch, robbing Rizzo. Astros still up 6-3. So we go to the bottom of the ninth. Same score, Aaron Hicks at the plate. Two runners on, nobody out. Can he play the hero? Hicks, boom, to deep right. It's gone. Game-tying three-run homer from Hicks. Hicks just loving that one. Drops the bat right after making contact, saying, count it. Third of the season for him. Ties the game at six. And then take a listen to Michael Kay on the YES Network. Aaron Judge comes up to the plate with two outs.
Driven down the left field line. It is a base hit. It goes into the corner. And the Yankees have done it again. Trevino scores. And they come all the way back for a dramatic 7-6 victory.
They do it again and again and again. The ninth walk-off win of the season for the Yankees, most in the majors. Yanks win at 7-6, 15th straight win at home, the longest such Yankee streak since 1961. And you talk about a money player, indeed. Think about this, folks. Today is Judgment Day. Literally, Aaron Judge and the Yankees have an arbitration hearing to determine his salary for the 2022 season. And what a setup this is in terms of drama. Buster only joining us now to talk about it. Now, Buster, this whole situation is just, it's just almost like being in court, right? You're going in front of a figure that's like a judge. It's an arbitrator. And the Yankees are on one side, Judge is on the other, and they're discussing how much he's worth. And so on the heels of that walk-off, I have to ask, why is today such a monumental day in the relationship between Judge and the Yankees?
Because in theory, it's another opportunity for the two sides to work out a long-term deal that would keep Judge with the Yankees. But there's no indication that that's going to happen. Now, typically, arbitration hearings are held in February. But because of the owner's lockout, it's being held during the course of the season. And this is something really important to remember. For the sake of this arbitration hearing, both sides have to not even pay attention to what's happened in 2022. All the information is going to be based on what Aaron Judge has accomplished and done before 2022. That walk-off hit last night, that didn't count. The 27 homers this year, that doesn't count. So we'll see where this goes. But certainly, if you're Aaron Judge, you're walking into that hearing, or you're sitting in front of a Zoom call, actually, at noon today, wearing a suit jacket, feeling good about the season you're having.
But I think it's such a fascinating situation because essentially the Yankees have to get in there and talk about how he wasn't that great and doesn't deserve this kind of money for last year's performance, and Judge is hearing all of that. And, of course, he bet on himself turning down a $200 million contract before the season began. How much more money has he made for himself, in your opinion, over the last 3 months?
Yeah, I think the contract that he gets in the upcoming offseason in free agency is going to start with the number three. Look, he and the Yankees were not close in the negotiations that broke apart in early April. The Yankees were talking about paying him annually more than players like Mookie Betts, Giancarlo Stanton, Bryce Harper. Judge's camp was looking for a deal in the Mike Trout level, about $36 million. And the old saying in baseball goes, all it takes is one inspired owner. And I think some owner is going to step up. Look at Aaron Judge as being one of the biggest names in the sport, one of the biggest names in professional sports, and says, you know what? I'm going to pay that guy.
Wow, there's an owner named Steve. I think he's in the New York area. Maybe he could be among those people. We'll have to see. Buster, though, we can't let you go before asking you to bet the family farm, because we like for people to bet things and put up their farms. So here we go. Aaron Judge, will he be a Yankee next season? Buster?
No, I don't think he will be. I would bet on the other 29 teams, one of those owners, to be inspired. The Yankees would be clinical in their offer, and there will be an owner who will say, I want that guy to be the anchor of my franchise going forward.
Oh, boy. Yankees fans' heads just exploded. Okay, I'm setting the over-under at 59.5 home runs for Judge. That's what I'm doing. What are you taking?
And he's on pace today, Ryan, to hit 62 if he continues on the current trajectory. I'm going to go under because I think in this world of analytics in baseball in 2022, other teams will say, we're not going to pitch to him. We're going to give him the Barry Bonds treatment.
Wow. If he stays healthy, I say over. Lastly, which team is the biggest threat to the Yankees winning the World Series?
The Atlanta Braves, the defending champions, who are quietly putting all parts of their team together. It's the best rotation they've had in the last 5 years. Ronald Acuna Jr. is working his way back from that knee injury. And we know that Alex Anthopoulos, their general manager, will be aggressive before the trade deadline, getting the pieces they need to try to be the first team since the 98 to 2000 Yankees to go back-to-back.
Oh, boy, you never count out those Braves. Buster Olney, great job this morning, my friend. Take care. All right, coming up, Arch Manning was the biggest fish in 2023 college football recruiting class. So how did the Texas Longhorns hook the latest star from football's first family? And James Harden, guess what? He can opt into a huge payday next week. But is that the best thing for the Sixers? I need a good answer here. We got to hear it. Coming back.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Back with you on Get Up and some big news in college football. The top 2023 recruit and quarterback Arch Manning has committed to the Texas Longhorns. Arch has quite the family lineage. He's the nephew of Peyton and Eli Manning and the grandson of Archie Manning. Now, Arch is going to try to live up to the legacy of his uncles and his grandfather. Each of them finished in the top three in Heisman voting in their senior season, and all three were either the first or second pick in their respective NFL draft. Pete Thamel's been all over this story, and he joins us this morning. Thanks so much for getting up with us, Pete. Pete, what was the deciding factor with Arch in terms of choosing Texas over all these other big schools?
Yeah, obviously the family's lineage is so deeply rooted in the SEC that Texas was a little bit of a surprise, Ryan. But I really think from talking to Nelson Stewart, who's the coach at Isidore Newman and Arch Manning's high school coach and a longtime friend of the Manning family, the relationship with Steve Sarkisian, the Texas head coach and one of the best offensive minds in college football. Remember, Steve Sarkisian was Matt Leinart's quarterback coach 20 years ago at USC. He obviously was with the run of Jalen Hurts, Tua Tagovailoa, and Mac Jones at Alabama recently. He's a deft, experienced quarterback guy, a great play caller, and he is clearly the best guy the Manning family thinks to take Arch Manning from high school prospect to NFL prospect.
See, I think this is incredible because in many ways, Arch Manning is taking a little bit of a risk. Texas's struggles are well documented. This past decade, you got zero Big 12 titles, only one New Year's Six Bowl in the last 12 years. Should we expect Arch Manning to take Texas into the perennial, into being a perennial college football playoff contender?
Bluntly, no. They have so far to go that they are so beyond one recruit helping them get into that conversation. I mean, they need to take a bowl this year. Like, they went 5-7. They lost to Kansas at home. The best way to think about the state of this Texas program now, in the moment that Arch Manning has committed, is that they're essentially three touchdowns behind Arkansas, which is a middle-of-the-pack team in the SEC. They lost at Arkansas by essentially three touchdowns last year. So what Arch Manning does is gives them a building block for SEC competitiveness. He gives them a linchpin, a face of their recruiting, a magnet for other blue chips that can help them build and be competitive in the SEC. But to say Arch Manning, you know, they roll out of bed and can compete with Alabama and Georgia now is crazy. They have a long way to go. This is certainly a huge help, and you can't overstate what a big deal this is. But before we all yell Texas is back, let's wait a few years, stack a few recruiting classes, and really fill that roster with more talent.
Okay, considering he spurned Nick Saban to go to Texas, this could end up being a big risk for him. Now, do you think Arch Manning would be the number one recruit in this class if his last name wasn't Manning?
I think that's an excellent question. I think it's a fair question. He would be a top recruit in this class. There's no question. I talked to a handful of quarterback coaches yesterday, guys who evaluated this class. Is Arch Manning the best pure thrower, the best spinner of the ball, as the coaches like to say? Probably not. Is he one of the handful of best? Definitely. But quarterback play, as we know, the guy with the biggest arm doesn't get picked first in the draft, right? Quarterback play is so much mental, and there's so much nuance reading defenses. And I think Arch Manning's built-in advantage is that, A, he loves football, he's dedicated to it, and he's going to have the mental aspect of the game mastered.
And there's nothing wrong with it. Things don't go so well. You got your famous uncles and your grandfather to call and get that advice. Pete Thamel, great to talk to you. Appreciate it. And by the way, speaking of great quarterbacks, here was one of the best of the NFL draft class this past season. Kenny Pickett was the only quarterback taken in the first round of this year's NFL draft. And yesterday, he signed with the team that took him, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Pickett is the first quarterback taken by the Steelers in the first round since they chose Big Ben back in 2004, and he hopes to succeed Roethlisberger as Pittsburgh's starter. So let's bring in Jeremy Fowler and Rob Ninkovich to talk it over. Jeremy, expand on that thought. How should fans expect the quarterback battle to play out in Pittsburgh?
Well, Ryan, they should expect Mitchell Trubisky to have an upper hand, at least going into training camp. He got a lot of first-team reps in OTAs and minicamp. They gave him $6-plus million this offseason to come in with some pedigree, former number two overall pick, and try to take hold of this offense. But Kenny Pickett has room here to make a major move over the next 6 weeks when he's in camp. If he can take the job, the Steelers will play no favorites. Right now, though, at least the loose plan is for Trubisky to get that job. Kenny Pickett can ease into that position as sort of the number two, number three quarterback, knowing that maybe he plays week 15. Maybe it's next year. Maybe it's even week six. If he can make that move, he'll play sooner than later.
Okay, so that's the plan right now. But, Ninko, is there a scenario that you see by which Pickett would be the day one starter?
Well, number one would be injury, obviously, if Trubisky, something happened to him during training camp. But, listen, he would have to be the clear-cut better player through training camp. They're having an evaluation process right now through the offseason. You go into training camp, you have a competition, an old-fashioned competition that brings out the best in everybody. So he would have to come in day one of training camp, clearly be the better thrower, clearly have control of the huddle, and clearly understand and grasp the offense for him to be the day one starter.
All right, so a tall task for him to be the day one starter, but either way, a lot of optimism for him coming into Pittsburgh and what he might do in the future. Okay, now here's an interesting thing. We're talking about a rookie this year. It's a rookie last year. Off a dominant rookie year, Micah Parsons has got some lofty goals for his sophomore season. What they are and why the Cowboys star may need to pump the brakes a bit.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Back with you on Get Up and time for your morning wake-up call. Yankees score 4 in the 9th to win last night. Here's John Sterling on WFAN Radio.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone to tie the game. It is a 3-run home run for Aaron Hicks. And the 3-0. Line hard deep to left field. Base hit. Trevino rounds third. He's coming home. Trevino scores. Ball game over. Yankees win the Yankees win.
And they do it over and over. That was Judge's second walk-off hit of the year, but he's chasing a much bigger number. The Yankee star is on pace to hit 63 homers this season. That, of course, would break the franchise record of 61 set by Roger Maris in 1961. All right, let's go to the NFL. Let's run the hurry up. Jeremy, let's start with Jimmy Garoppolo.
Ryan, let's do it. Here's what I'm hearing about Garoppolo's timeline from his shoulder surgery. He is supposed to meet with his doctor really any moment now, sometime late this week. Once that happens, he expects to be cleared to throw a football sometime in the next 1 to 2 weeks. So once he does that, his trade market should heat up. Teams have essentially just been waiting for him to be able to throw a football past the physical. Seattle's been looking around on this, and so has Carolina. So that should heat up before training camp. And then if we switch to another quarterback, huge name is Baker Mayfield. We've all been waiting for this one. Here's what I'm hearing about Seattle. They've done their homework on Baker Mayfield. They have had some interest. They've done a lot of film work to see how he would fit in their offensive system. But a lot of that interest has been predicated on him being released. They've been sort of waiting for that. If he's released, then he could be had on the cheap. They could sign him outright without giving up a draft pick. If they trade for him, it would have to be a heck of a deal for Seattle. That's been the line of thinking. Carolina still looms large here. They've been involved with the Mayfield sweepstakes for the better part of 3 months, dating back to the draft. So a lot of people I talked to around the league expect Carolina to be his landing spot.
Okay, so everybody's still kicking the tires on Baker Mayfield. We'll see what happens there. Meanwhile, Cowboys linebacker Micah Parsons, and he had a rookie season for the ages. He recorded 30 quarterback hits, 20 tackles for loss, 13 sacks, named Defensive Player of the Year. But Parsons is not resting on his laurels as he enters year number two. Look at this. When he was asked about his sack goal for this season, Parsons told CBS Sports, 15's like the minimum. 15's what I want to hit. But definitely 23 is that goal to break the record. Big talk from the sophomore player. Ninko, can Micah Parsons break the sack record this season?
Can he focus on helping his team win the division first? Like, listen, I understand having goals. I understand lofty goals are great, having goals. But sacks and focusing on the record and all that stuff, that's more individual stats than actual helping the team win the division, which the Cowboys have to do. They have to have a better season than last year or it's going to be a problem for that coaching staff. And I'm sure Jerry Jones would love for him to break the record, but it's really tough to do that if he's an inside linebacker. I don't know if they're switching him to just be a designated pass rusher, but to get the stats and to get those sack numbers, you literally have to pass rush on every down. So that's like forgetting about the run. That's not worrying about the run. That's just focusing on getting to the quarterback. So, yeah, we know he's very talented, but let's pump the brakes on the lofty goals of 23 sacks. How about just focusing on winning?
Yeah, and I understand the confidence. Look, he's a young guy. He's confident. I'm sure he gets the question about the sack record. And so some people might say, well, what do you think he's going to say? He's excited about himself. But, Jeremy, when you talk to people about around the league, what do they say about Parsons' talent and his ability to possibly challenge this record?
Same line comes up when I talk to scouts and execs. He's a one percenter. He's that 1% of the 1%, elite athlete. And here's why I'm not pumping the brakes on this guy potentially doing this. I'm taking my foot off the brake. The stats are insane. His pass rush win rate last year was like 30%. It was higher than Aaron Donald's. He ranks 6th in the NFL. This is from Sneaky Hembo. 6th in the NFL in sacks, but 109th in actual pass rush attempts because he was playing inside linebacker half the time. So after asking around, I know the Cowboys still plan to sort of split his reps 50-50 from linebacker to a pass rusher off the edge. But talking to teams, they say the Cowboys would be crazy not to put him on the edge, rushing the passer 100% of the time. That's what he should be doing. So if he gets the attempts, maybe he'll get the numbers.
Yeah, but he's got to have those attempts. He's not a great point. Go ahead.
He's not sneaking up on anybody this year, so he's not a rookie anymore. Yeah. The teams know he's a good pass rusher, so he's going to have the attention, maybe extra help, chip, tight ends, all that stuff's going to be attention to him because he is a good player. So this year might be a little bit harder than last year, definitely, because he's going to have that attention.
And that might spell trouble for the Dallas Cowboys defense. So, Ninko, will the Cowboys defense, do you think, be better this season than it was last season?
Well, they should be. I mean, listen, they have the talent. They have the coaching. So with that, now it just comes down to coming together as a team and building that chemistry, and now everyone understanding where you're supposed to be, what your assignments are. And listen, the best teams, the best defenses, they work as a unit. So if they can come together and use that talent that they have, they do have talent. They have a ton of it. So come together as a team, build on last year, build on your roster, build on that chemistry, and they should be better than last year.
Yeah, they have to be better if they're going to really challenge or really try to contend coming out of the NFC. Okay, meanwhile on planet Earth, guys, check out, Nico, I got to show you this. Check out this runaway golf cart at the Travelers Championship. Now, what you notice, nobody's in it, driving itself into the water. Look at that guy trying to stop it. Don't even touch that. Nico, what would you do if this was driving at you?
I'm running away the opposite direction, to the side. You don't run away from it if it's coming at you. Go to the side. You know, listen, we've seen this before. Ask Danny Amendola's old man was in. You remember the one, the cart coming down the football field and it hit all the high school coaches? Listen, runaway carts are never a good thing. Get away from them. Don't even try to stop it because you're going to end up looking like the guy that's on it, falling off. Highlight reel. Can't do it.
Jeremy Fowler, you wouldn't jump in and try to slow it down?
Well, I know what I would do is I would jump on top of it and surf on it as it gets into the water. That's what I would have done.
Whoa!
But that's a terrible tackling angle there that he took.
I'm impressed.
You got to take a better angle than that.
All right. I want to see that one day. We'll have to look out for that. Jeremy Fowler surfing on a golf cart, folks. Look out for it someday on Twitter. All right, game five of the Stanley Cup final tonight. The Avs up 3-1. They're going to look to close out the Lightning and win their first cup since 2001. But the two-time defending champs aren't going to make it easy. Our coverage begins at 8 Eastern on ABC and ESPN+. Well, coming up, Kyrie Irving pushes impasse with the Nets farther down the road with a list of teams he wants to be traded to. How do you think his pal KD's feeling about that? We'll talk about it when we come back on Get Up. Okay, some big decisions in the NBA are going to be made this summer, and that is where Zach Lowe comes in. Zach, should the 76ers give the max to James Harden this offseason?
No, under no circumstances. If you're talking the 5-year fully guaranteed max, absolutely not. That went out the door a long time ago with his latest elimination game blunder. That's gone. Shorter term deal, please.
Okay, let's see if he accepts that. Now, should the Pelicans give the rookie max extension to Zion Williamson?
Absolutely. Despite the injuries, you have to do it. He's that talented. I suspect they'll build in some injury-related protections or games played protections, just as the Sixers did with Joel Embiid before. But yeah, if you're the New Orleans Pelicans, small market, you bring back Zion, no doubt.
Okay, now here's the big one. Should the Nets give a max deal to Kyrie Irving?
Woo! Sounds easy to say no. Hard no. He doesn't deserve it. He hasn't earned it. He never plays. But you do risk some discomfort or alienation with KD, a DEFCON 1 scenario of a trade request from KD. I still, though, say no. Find a middle ground that makes sense for everybody, a shorter-term deal.
Okay, no with caveats. And by the way, Kyrie put out this... not put out, but he's got a reported trade wish list, including both L.A. teams, the Lakers, the Clippers, as well as the crosstown Knicks, the Heat, the Mavericks, and mind-bogglingly also the 76ers. None of those teams have enough cap space to sign him without Brooklyn's help, and sources said some of them aren't interested in acquiring him. Okay, so Woj, you were leading the charge on this story, that list. As you look at that list, Does this make any sense to you? How do you process this?
Well, listen, part of this is a negotiation. He has wanted that long-term max deal in Brooklyn. It is not available to him there. I think the one team with the most interest in Kyrie Irving are the Lakers. There's really not a sign-and-trade scenario with Brooklyn that makes sense. Of course, if the Lakers wanted to offer Anthony Davis in a sign and trade, of course the Nets would love that. That's not, but that's not going to happen. And so if you're Kyrie Irving, your way to get to the Lakers very likely would be to opt out of your contract next week and sign the $6 million exception that the Lakers would have available. Now, the difference between that and his opt-in with the Nets is over $30 million. They could clear cap space the next year. They would have Russell Westbrook potentially coming off their cap and sign you to a more lucrative long-term deal if things work out. But we, you know, in most cases, you would say a player's not going to do that. He's not going to give up that much money. But Kyrie Irving did give up about $17 million last year in salary by not getting vaccinated. Perhaps really impacted the loss of a shoe deal with the fact that he's been so unavailable. So with him, I don't think you say that won't happen, that'll never happen. But I think that list in terms of teams like Dallas, Philadelphia, the Clippers, I don't think there's interest there. The Knicks, they have some priorities well ahead of Kyrie Irving. Jalen Brunson is what, with Dallas, is who they are trying to clear cap space to sign in free agency, not Kyrie Irving right now.
Wow, but I can't see them turning down Kyrie if there's a possibility, because the Knicks seem to love that superstar talent. So, Zach, I look at this list, which just has me mind blown. Which team on that list, on that trade list, do you think is his best fit?
Well, let's be clear. Uncertainty is Kyrie Irving's leverage right now. Uncertainty about Durant and uncertainty about his option. The minute on paper he opts in for next year, if he does, he would seem to relinquish some control to the Nets, who can just keep him. But he may say, I'm only opting in on the condition that you have a prearranged trade to one of these other teams. As for fits, I agree with Woj. The Lakers would obviously love to have him. Is there a three-team trade where Russ somehow goes back to Oklahoma City in a salary dump? That seems complicated. The Knicks are an obvious fit if they think the Brunson situation isn't going to work out. Dallas may just outbid them for Jalen Brunson. We'll see. On paper, not in real life, but on paper, I've always liked the Dallas fit for him as the sort of theoretical secondary ball handler, jump shooter around Luka. But I just feel like, coming off a conference finals run, as Woj indicated, I feel like that kind of ship has sailed for the Mavericks. I don't see much there. And as for the other teams, they got a lot of other things to sort out. Obviously, there's huge questions about Kyrie Irving's reliability. That said, if he's healthy, the reason he was out last year was the vaccination mandate. That's gone. That's a non-issue. If he tells people, hey, look, I can get you 60, 65 games, that's possible. Who knows?
Wow. And the Sixers one has me mind-boggled, just because wasn't the whole thing of James Harden leaving Brooklyn because of the Kyrie situation, and now Kyrie would be saying, hey, I want to go to Philly. I don't know. I can't even go there. But let me ask you, the other question here is KD, right? Yeah. What's the impact of all of this on KD?
Yeah, listen, they came to Brooklyn together. They both still want to play together. And the difference between Durant and Irving right now, of course, is that Durant has a long-term contract that he signed last year. He's got 4 years left. Now, if Kevin Durant says, I want out and I want to be traded, if it's because Kyrie Irving opts out and leaves, or there's a sign and trade and he leaves, Brooklyn would potentially be able to put together a trade package and get back a haul that might be historic in nature. You've never seen a player of Kevin Durant's stature at the very top of his game, at the very top of the league, who's under contract long term, becoming available in the trade market. And so, remember, this isn't the transfer portal. You don't get to say where you want to go. Teams are going to line up and give maximum assets for Kevin Durant, because they know he has to play for them. He can't leave in a year or two in free agency, where you'd be left for nothing after you gassed all your best young players, all your draft picks. That does impact your ability to tell the Nets where you want to go play at 34 years old.
But is this more about Kyrie leaving, or is it more about KD wanting to be on a winning team? So, for example, if it doesn't work out there, is KD fine being on the Nets if they can bring in or at least have somebody who's comparable to Kyrie and give him a chance to win?
Well, I had been told in the last few days, Ryan, that scenario was exactly how Kevin Durant was looking at this. Mm-hmm. That if Kyrie left, well, the Nets would have to show them that we can reshape this roster and come back with a championship contender. I think that's an evolving thought process with Kevin Durant. I think that the Nets knew when they entered these conversations with Kyrie Irving about his future, that there was great risk about what it meant for Kevin Durant moving forward if they didn't, if they weren't prepared to do a long-term deal, a long-term max deal with Kyrie Irving. Obviously, they've been willing to take that risk because Kyrie Irving has not heard from the Nets that the idea about a long-term commitment. So all of it is very much up in the air, and I think there's going to have to be some dialogue here to see if there's a way they can move forward. But I think this is a very perilous time for the future of this Nets organization and this great experiment with Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, them coming together trying to win a championship in Brooklyn. It's not going great, Ryan.
Yeah. Zach, what do you think about all this, especially the KD side?
I agree with Woj. I think it's perilous is exactly the right word. You are one or two steps away from the entire thing going up in smoke, from you having lost James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Durant in the span of like 6 months. And as far as reloading, if Kyrie leaves for nothing, if Kyrie does the nuclear option of opting out and signing wherever he wants to go for whatever is available to him, Durant is going to look around and say, okay, I've got Ben Simmons, who hasn't played for us yet, and we don't really know what he's going to look like on our team, and then a bunch of role players. And at that point, the Nets are short on time and short on assets to retool around those two guys. Other teams have been preparing for this offseason for months and months and months, lining up all their ducks in a row. The Nets are suddenly thrust into a situation where on the fly, with not a lot to work with, in that scenario that Kyrie leaves for nothing, they would have to rebuild their team around them. That seems like a tall order. I agree this is perilous. And like Woj says, the whole league opens up for Kevin Durant. Every team with interest will throw the whole kit and caboodle at the Nets, and maybe that's the route you have to go, but we'll see. There's still time for a resolution.
Right. What a difference a couple months make. Just a couple months ago, they had Kyrie and Harden, and now no Harden. Kyrie, what's up? And what could happen with KD? And by the way, speaking of Harden, Kyrie's former teammate, Philadelphia 76er, and just like Kyrie, Harden has until Wednesday to pick up his player option for next season or become an unrestricted free agent. Now, Woj, given all that happened with Harden in the playoffs, his sputtering, how do you see this playing out with the 76ers?
That James Harden will be back in Philadelphia on some kind of an extension. And, you know, as Zach said earlier, you know, it's unlikely that it's almost assuredly not going to be the full 5 year max extension. He doesn't have the leverage to demand it right now. There's nowhere else in the marketplace he could go and get it. His best chance to make the most money on the best contract in a place that he chose to play is Philadelphia. And so I think there's going to be a common ground there on something shorter than the full max, but still a very significant commitment from the Sixers to keep James Harden.
Okay, and then in that line of thinking, Zach, when you talk about James Harden in Philly, can he be that all-NBA player that he used to be, or are those days over?
I think the days of, like, first-team all-NBA are over, but if he has a serious summer of conditioning and getting healthy, the pick-and-roll combination between him and Embiid was the single best pick-and-roll combination in the NBA after the trade. If he's healthy and locked in on his conditioning, I do think there's a scenario where he can get back into like that third team all-NBA, solid all-star, upper tier all-star conversation. Not first team. I think those days are over, but I'm not quite ready to shut the door on this guy as one of the 15 or 20 best players in the NBA. Philly certainly has to hope that's the case, because if that door is shut, their path to contending for a title around Embiid in the next 2 years gets a lot murkier.
Okay, an optimist over there. So do you think they can actually be a contender with Harden and this team as currently constructed?
I think right now with Harden, Maxey, Embiid, Tobias Harris, I love the Melton trade. I still think they're a little bit short of the best teams in the East, but not a lot short. If they're healthy and locked in, that's a really, really good team.
Okay. All right, guys. Thanks. It'll be an interesting NBA next couple days. But coming up, this man, his name being called first, surprised some, but that wasn't the only thing that stood out about Paolo Banchero. He was a sharp-dressed man yesterday. We'll talk about that coming up.